We'll go ahead and begin. So I'll call the meeting of the Yolo County Transportation District Board of Directors of Monday, November 8th to order. And we'll, could we determine a quorum, please?
We do have a quorum present.
Great. And would you go ahead and call roll, please?
City of Davis is not currently present. City of West Sacramento.
Here.
City of Winters?
Here.
City of Woodland?
Here.
Yolo County?
Here.
UC Davis?
Here.
And I don't see Caltrans represented yet.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. We'll go now to item two, which is consider approval of the agenda. Autumn, is there anything you'd like to let us know about the agenda, or is it ready to go as it stands?
No changes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
So seconded.
Very good. Thank you. So we have a motion by Staller and a second by Lauren. Would you call the roll, please?
City of Davis? City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Aye.
Yolo County.
Here, aye.
The motion passes.
Very good. And Lucas, we just voted on the motion to approve the agenda. Do you say aye?
I say aye, and I am here. I was in the waiting room. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. So this meeting is being held, by the way, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956E1. And this is, we're doing this via teleconference. We will adopt that motion to continue this when we get to our consent agenda. We will have opportunity for people to speak to us on items that we're taking that are on the agenda, as well as a general public comment time. And we will move to that at this point. This is item three on our agenda, and it's comments from the public regarding matters not on our agenda, but within the purview of our agency. And please note that we're not permitted to discuss items not on the agenda at this time, other than perhaps a brief response, because it's not legally posted and because it's not fair to others who might have an interest in the same topic. So with that, are there anybody here who'd like to address us on items not on our agenda?
We do not have any requests from the public at this time.
Okay. Is there any written comment that's been submitted for our consideration?
No.
Okay, very good. So that brings us to the consent agenda. There are five items on the consent calendar. Are there any that you'd like to remove, Autumn? Is there any member of the board that who would like to have a further discussion on any of the items on the consent calendar? Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Happy to move the consent calendar by Ferrix.
Thank you.
Ledesma seconds.
Wonderful. So we have a motion by Ferrix and a second by Ledesma to approve the consent agenda. And that does have a very interesting topic of declaring two buses as surplus property and authorize their disposal and other topics as well. So would you call the roll, please, Janice? Or excuse me, Kathy?
City of Davis.
Aye.
City of West Sacramento.
Aye.
City of Winters.
Aye.
City of Woodland.
Aye.
Yolo County.
Aye.
The motion passes.
Thank you, everybody. We'll move to item five, and this is a board member report, announcements, other nominations, anything for the good of the cause. Any member of the board have something to report? Jesse?
Yeah, I would just have to say that both Supervisor Saylor and myself attended the virtual CAP-to-CAP delegation, and basically five advocacy days, 31 electeds, 112 delegation meetings, 200 participants, and we talked about transportation and broadband and other infrastructure, including the Capital Region Prosperity Strategy.
We saved a lot of travel time and cost on that one, too.
Lots of greenhouse gases were not emitted.
That's right. And I think, of course, Friday, the enactment of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act changes the game for us all as we look at the challenges and needs and opportunities of this agency. Any other items to report? Okay, we'll move to item six. Autumn, this is the approval of contract amendment with TransDev to increase wages. And I know you and your team and county staff have been working with TransDev very closely for quite a while to get to this point.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't believe I can, actually I can now share my screen. So let me go ahead and I'll do that. And we have a slide deck here for, did I do the right one? Are you seeing the slide deck?
There's a slide deck.
Excellent. Let's see if I can put it in full screen. How about that?
Perfect.
Okay, great. So, yes, I'm very excited to be bringing this item to you tonight. This is, we're very pleased with the progress we've had over the last 6 to 8 weeks in our conversations with TransDev about how we can bring forward a contract amendment that will allow us to increase the wages for our drivers. I think this is a really essential item, and I'm very pleased and grateful for all the work with our partners at TransDev to make this happen. So our recommendation is to amend our contract to increase the wages. We believe that this wage increase will assist in retaining our existing drivers and recruiting new ones. This hopefully will allow us to avoid additional service cuts and move as quickly as we possibly can to restore suspended services and move forward with our implementation of our Go Logo strategy. As you'll recall, I'm sure no one has forgotten, in September 2021, we had to take action very quickly to respond to a sudden change in driver resources, whereby we reduced the amount of temporary assistance we had planned to provide in Davis by half. We indefinitely postponed the Route 42 expansion, and we temporarily suspended all of our remaining and express commute services. Those remain suspended. We continue to meet our pullout in terms of we are not missing service currently, but we are just barely squeaking by at the moment, trying to minimize the amount of driver losses. We have lost a few more drivers, but so far we've been able to continue to provide our services. So the proposal that you have in front of you would cost about $663,000 at our current service level, rising as we are successful in recruiting new drivers, the cost would go up from there, but not too much higher, as you can see in the board packet. We've got details there. Actually, I realize this number is a bit off. It's $933 per year, rising to $662,000 at our planned service levels. So that's about a 5 to 8% increase in our annual cost of our fixed route and paratransit service. And in terms of how we would pay for it, you know, right now with the American Recovery Plan Act funding that we have, we can cover the cost of this increase through the end of fiscal year 2024-25. Which is the final year in our contract with TransDev before we go to option year. So it's the final mandatory year in our current contract. So, you know, at that point, we would need to look at potentially, you know, reducing the amount of LTF funds that are returned to the member jurisdictions or looking at other kind of funding sources that may become available. But we are lucky that this is happening in a time where while the drivers are a scarce resource, right now, we have these funds that we can use to cover the cost in the near term. So that's all I have in terms of slides for you. I'm happy to talk through. There's a lot of details in the amendment that's been provided. Oh, I'm sorry. I do have one more slide. And just to walk through the proposed the wage increases so you understand exactly what this would mean for our staff. Or for TransDev staff. So currently the average operator wage in our region is $23.33. Here at Yolo Bus, it's about a dollar less, $22.06. However, for those who have less than 5 years of seniority, it's $17.27 is our average. So what you see is that, our wages are quite low until you get in 5 years of seniority and then they go up. So the proposal that you see here would increase those wages pretty, with the most substantial increases being for those who are in years 3 through 4. And again, this is a reflection of what we've heard from exit interviews and what we know from looking at comparable wages for others in the area, that this is where we're most vulnerable. We're losing people after they have a couple of years of experience. They're going to where they can make more money. So this is really intended to help give people give our operators motivation to stay here and to see that they're getting a significant increase every year all the way up through until they get to that fifth year. We're also proposing increases for our operations support staff. That this is the dispatchers, the customer service representatives, and road supervisors, of about $3 an hour for them, and then the maintenance staff as well. And those increases are a bit smaller. We think, you know, based on what we saw in terms of comps, the disparity between our maintenance staff and comparable maintenance staff elsewhere is a little bit smaller. But we do again want to make sure that we're keeping everybody right now because we need every single person we have. We don't want to lose anyone else. And so we hope that this proposal will allow us to, again, stay competitive, to retain the folks that we have, and to recruit more, people to help fill those vacancies. So again, I'm happy to answer questions about anything that's here or what's in the board packet. I know there's a lot. The exhibits that are in your board packet, we have the actual draft of the amendment, proposed amendment. And then we also have Exhibit E, which is how we kind of price. It's the unit pricing that we use for this contract. So we're completely replacing that exhibit. And note that I've included it at two different, what the costs look like at our current service levels, as well as what they would look like once, you know, we're able to ramp up to our full YOLO Go implementation. And then lastly, the final attachment that's in there is a letter from TransDev basically detailing their proposal here. And we've included that as an attachment to the amendment so that it's really clear that all the information that's in here with regard to how these funds would be used is included as part of the amendment to the agreement.
So, Autumn, have you finished your presentation?
Yes.
Two brief questions, and then I'll turn to the board for their additional questions. First of all, what's your expectation, or maybe this is a question for TransDev as well, of the successful hiring that this change might bring? Do we expect that this is going to make kind of move the bubble for us? And then the second, can you describe the penalty portion of the contract language?
Yes, happy to. So on the first question, it's pretty tough. I think to the question about what kind of recruitment we expect. You know, we are in a pretty unprecedented period right now in terms of our labor situation, both for this industry and across the economy. I would say I feel confident that this will assist with our retention situation, that this is people can have a raise without having to go find a new job. I think that will help us a lot. In terms of recruitment, I think it's very, very hard to say how quickly we'll be able to fill those vacancies. I can say we've got a team at TransDev. We're checking in with them weekly, and they're giving us updates on their recruitment efforts. And I feel confident that they are really doing everything in their power to bring candidates in the door. But it's just a very tough labor market out there. And I would invite Michael Klein, who's here from TransDev, to offer any comments he'd like on that. And then I can also answer your second question with regard to penalties. Michael, are you able to speak, to be heard?
Oh, there I am. I wasn't sure if I was able to or not. Good evening. As far as recruiting, like Autumn has said, we're in different, strange times. With this, I would say the biggest part is the retention. This would definitely help us immediate with the retention on everyone's idea on why they're leaving. Most we're getting from the exit interviews, everyone's looking for more money. The cost of living went up somewhere in a 4.6% this year, as everyone's talked about, more than normal, and it's just where they're at. And it's just hearing from everyone and the ones that have come in even that we've interviewed and, you know, we've talked about the wages and they just all say the same thing. I can go down the road and, you know, work for someone else with less responsibility, making more money. So this would definitely be the biggest retention. Some of the folks we've had lately, of course, you know, as soon as the board packet goes out, everyone hears about it. So a lot of the operators heard it, and we've actually had two that were on the fence. One had put in notice, and once they heard about it just yesterday, they retracted their resignation, waiting to see what happened. So that was very good. It was a person that's been with us for several years as well. So there was a few other of the men in the talking, because we had conversations. We had a barbecue last Friday. Bless you. And it was very positive through the barbecue, and they were bringing a lot of questions. I said, well, there's not much I could talk about it except for this is what's on the table, what they already know. They already printed out and everything. So very positive talk around, and they're looking forward that this does go through, that they're very happy.
Good,
you know, as far as getting folks in the door, this is, if anything's going to help, this is definitely going to do it.
Very good. Thank
and
you.
We thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Good comments.
I wanted to respond to Don's other question, if I may, with regard
to. Come to you.
Is that okay?
Yeah, then we'll come to Tom after that.
Okay, great. So you had asked about what kind of penalty or consequences there would be. Now, our existing contract does include a set of remedies for any kind of breach or violation of the contract, but we felt that for this, it was important to have a remedy that would be kind of specifically geared towards this provision. And so what we put in here, and it's if you look at what's in the board packet, it's the bottom of page 54 and the top of page 55. Essentially what we've done is, again, recognizing that there's a lot of factors beyond our control when it comes to recruitment, but when it comes to retention, again, we're doing this so that we feel we have some assurances that we're not going to have to cut additional service and, you know, further do that harm to our riders. So we've established a weekly level of service as 2,396 one-way trips per week, which is an average of the number of trips we've been doing per week for the last several months. Since all of these changes have taken effect. So what we have here is that if at any point we are making fewer than 2,396 trips per week, and those could not necessarily exactly on the routes as we have them scheduled, if, you know, we could move them around, but that is the number. If we fall below that, we can deduct $11,300 per week from our payments to TransDev. So that essentially I could go through the math on how we came that up, but essentially that means that we're no longer paying for these wage increases. And so they would be paying for them themselves until they can get the service level back up. We can also elect to waive those remedies if we think that there are some circumstances beyond, you know, our control and TransDev's control that, you know, are making it such that service needs to be cut, and we feel that they've done everything in their power to avoid that. So it gives us the option to do it, but it gives us the flexibility to determine, you know, if those remedies are appropriate.
So a little bit of shared risk and commitment to good faith efforts. So that sounds like a good piece. So then we have others have questions. Tom has his hand up, and others, let's have questions, and then we'll see if there's any public comment before we take action. So Tom, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Autumn. I certainly feel we have to do this. Obviously, it would have been nice if we'd done it sooner so that we could have saved some of those people who felt the need to go elsewhere, but here we are. My concern is ARP funding is not going to be renewed indefinitely, and, you know, we want to be sustainable. Have you projected out the implications of this decision beyond 3 years?
You know, only to say that we would have to identify additional sources of funding for this. You know, the most obvious one, of course, being our LTF funding which we get from jurisdictions. And my thought would be that as we start to get closer to that point, we would want to sort of, rather than approach a cliff, if you will, that we would want to sort of gradually ramp down the ARP funding and ramp up additional contributions. I don't know with the infrastructure bill. I haven't had a chance to dig into the details of that yet. you know, what those prospects look like. I assume that most of that is going to be for capital rather than operations. But it's something that I, you know, I did take a hard look at to make sure that we're not putting ourselves in a position where, where we're going to drop off funding precipitously. I will say that I think we have some flexibility with regard to our ARP funding and some of the other kind of recovery funds that are out there that I think will put us in shape so that we can have a lengthy conversation. I'll put it that way, a lengthy conversation about how to replace these funds as they run out.
Probably at budget time, it'd be nice to have a projection, a five-year projection. Well, I think it's good to know what we're perceiving as future revenues and future costs, because we're probably headed for a deficit. That's what it's getting down to. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Jesse, you had your hand up.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the stabilization and strengthening of the organization and the document, and that Mike has, you know, gone out and asked questions of people. I wanted to ask about the, it's page 60 and inside the Transdev letter, where it has that the Transdev currently offers the following bonuses: a signing bonus of $3,500, a referral bonus of $600, a safety bonus of $1,000 a year, an ASE certification bonus for the mechanics. I was just wondering if with this, as a retention, you know, formula, do we need the signing bonus, and does it need to be at that level? And have we thought about maybe a retention bonus? And I guess my questions are all for Mike.
Well, as far as the signing up bonuses, those for the new hires, of course, there's two steps. There's a $2,500 and $3,500. The $3,500 is for applicants that already have CDLs with experience. The sign up, the other bonuses for referral bonuses go for any employees coming in, for our current employees that refer the openings. And then as far as the mechanics, they have ASE bonuses. So the more ASEs they get, they have a potential to get up to $3,000 a year bonus. Those are usually $100 each until they get up to a master certification and they can potential $3,000. So those are items that have been in place. There's only a few that are taking full that have those right now. You know, some are just individuals, but we are working on some programs, helping them along. That's paid training as well to further their education with ASCs and for additional bonuses. As far as for recruiting, we have discussed some more for the retaining, you know, putting money there. We've done some different things. We have a safety bonus that's there for them, that we've changed some of the specifics up on, so for qualifying for, you know, that they get those on their quarterly times. As far as additional retention bonuses, we have done some discussions, but we haven't completed that on something that we could do on what level. You know, consider just calling a retention bonus or, you know, putting a time frame on that. But we're still working on that one.
So just a follow-up question. Is it in your opinion that we still need that level of signing bonus and the new salary?
Well, on a normal time, I would say no. But at the same time, we have this, so does SACRT and the other locations that are doing signing bonuses as well. They have the wages and the sign-on bonuses, so it's kind of staying with the time since we're competitive with our, you know, other agencies out there.
Thank you. That's what I needed to know, is if it was a competitive need. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good question. Thank you. Chris?
Thanks. And I think my questions are along the same lines it's really comment. So, Mr. Chair, I could wait till after public comment to come back and raise. I'm not sure I have any questions. It's a comment.
All right. Thank you. Matt's got a question, and then I don't see others. We'll go to public comment after that.
Yeah, thank you. I think my question is pretty simple. I'm wondering if we have a sense from drivers who've left us, if Transdev has a way to hire them back, and maybe give them back their seniority now that these wages are so much higher for the upper years. If they're good drivers who left us for some reason, if there's a way we could get them back, that might be attractive now that our wages are higher. So I don't know if Transev has a mechanism already or if we need to amend the agreement for that.
Well, the situation is we have a CBA here. So they're organized, and so we are in communication right now with the union. As far as bringing anyone back that's left after such a time, once they're non-employed here anymore, their wage is right now that they can't come back to their seniority. But I am working on a plan right now to where we can do a similar program to what SACRT has as a fast track program. And so we're working on that right now, and hopefully that will be wrapped up by the end of the week to where they can, if they're experienced, depending on their experience, they're coming to a, you know, a later year. So they don't have to start at the bottom wages. And that's what SACRT is doing with all, or they've been doing with our employees for quite a while now.
That's great. And would that need to come back to the board, or is that something Transdev can add?
That's something that we can do.
Okay.
I think there's a bit of audio challenges with Michael. I don't know if anyone else is having a hard time hearing. So what he said at the beginning is that we have a CBA, a collective bargaining agreement, and that is the place where that needs to be negotiated. Again, you know, SACRT has had this in place for a while where they're able to take our drivers who have 2 years of experience and slot them in at a higher pay scale, and we want basically reciprocity on that so that we can do the same. But unfortunately, it's not up to us.
Okay, very good. Any other questions? Do we have any public comment requests? I don't see any hands raised, but maybe I missed that. Is
there somebody? No requests have come in at this time, Chair Saylor.
Okay. Chris, we'll turn to you. You want to make a comment or an observation?
Yeah, well, a couple of observations. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it really has to do with what Tom brought up. And first of all, I'm supportive of this, as it certainly the circumstances and the need for increase in wages, retaining and attracting good quality employees is important and imperative right now. Certainly, so I'm supportive, but it comes with some real caveats or real asks that. I think we have been asking, and no, this is not on our current executive director's to-do list, but we had been asking for a projection, a longer-term projection for the last 2 years. And part of that was bound to one of our values of having a sustainable model. And so I agree 100% with Mr. Stallard. It's something we've been asking for some time. Because the sustainability of this organization is imperative. We need to be able to get past the next three years at the end of fiscal year 25, knowing our future, which says to me not so much. There's two imperatives. One is on us as an organization that I don't want us to immediately defer to more city contributions as a standalone answer to how we're going to fund this. There's a lot of a lot of funding will end that we will be benefiting from as local governments in the next 2 years along with this. And the world is changing all around us. We have no idea what is in store for us as local governments. And so I think the real imperative on us as a board and us as the executive director and staff is to start thinking about other offsets, other sources of revenue, whatever it may be, because this is going to be we got 2 years, and there should be no surprises, which I would encourage the executive director to make sure they are meeting with the city managers to make sure there's some awareness around that. The other part is upon our contractor, Transdev, and that I appreciate all my colleagues bringing to the table ideas about how we can retain, how we can certainly attract back. But I would like to get an update on their efforts in terms of their recruiting and the retention on a regular basis. this took us by surprise, and I just don't, that's another surprise I want to avoid. One is not get the bill in 2 years as a city that we need to contribute more. That's not one. And the other one is not to get asked again for an emergency funding to retain employees as we are making commitments on new routes and everything else. So again, those are my two asks as we go forward on this, and not necessarily tied to a motion, but certainly hopefully my colleagues would support the notion of both. So again, I think it we'll say this, I don't see it necessarily as a kind of as we think about the sustainability of our organization as a negative exercise. I think these kind of things can bring bounds of opportunity. We said that when we hired a new executive director, we said that about some of the challenges we have. And I think kind of the reason we did our vision and values a couple of years ago was so that we could be open-minded to this. And I still believe we have a very strong board here that's ready to do some early work. So I think it's important that we start that in earnest. Just thanks for the opportunity and, Mr. Chair, and, happy to, hear from my colleagues if they agree with some of it.
Would you have an interest in making a motion for us to have on the floor?
I will, so moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion by Ledesma, second by Frerichs, but for additional discussion, Jesse, did you have your hand up for additional discussion?
You're muted here.
You're muted.
No, I was going to second, but can you just clarify the motion? Is it the motion in the packet or the motion in the packet additionally to have regular updates on this topic?
It was the motion in the packet with the request separately on staff and Transfed to report back.
Perfect.
And that was seconded by Frerichs. Does anyone else have a comment you want to make before we take a vote? I'll make a brief comment that we had, I think it was about a year ago, give or take, when we had a discussion of the compensation level for drivers, for bus operators at the board level. And then I think we acknowledged that that was sort of an issue for us at that point. And we can't keep running on the cheap, and we can't keep trying to do everything for everybody. So I think that Chris is right that we have a framework that we started off with. And this is a growth opportunity here for us, I believe. And we're not going to be able to operate even the system that we're doing now without these changes in the compensation. It's reasonable and fair, necessary for the market. I think I want to thank Transdev team for their work. And Michael, I want to make a strong suggestion, and we'll have some further discussion, that we engage Transdev with our Workforce Opportunity Investment Board, because they're doing some recruitment and training can help with the challenge that you're facing. It'd be nice to have you guys at the table. I don't know that they know that there's such a job classification as bus drivers, and we want to make sure that that's one of their targets. And so we'll talk a little bit further on that topic. With no further discussion, we're ready for a vote. Would you call the roll, please, Kathy?
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Tom, did you vote? You're on mute.
Aye.
Thank you.
Sorry.
And Yolo County?
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Very good. Congratulations, Autumn.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you very much. Congratulations, Michael.
Thank you.
Go get some water.
Very good. Brings us to item 7, then establish an I-80 managed lane subcommittee.
Yes, and I'm going to go ahead and share my screen again. So this is a brief item. The purpose of this is to respond to, I think, what I would say is a flurry of activity since our last board conversation, which I think was a really good and useful and overdue conversation with our partners at Caltrans about what kind of a project we want to see on the 80 managed lanes, which, again, this graphic here just reminds us all what we're talking about. We're talking about a new set of managed lanes on 80 from the Yolo Solano County line to just across the Sacramento River in Sacramento. And I think in part due to that conversation, there's been a number of meeting requests. There's been, I would say, a lot of really fruitful, productive conversation that I expect is going to be continuing going forward. There's two critical pieces that are going to be happening in the next few months. The first is that Caltrans will be releasing a draft EIR and going through the environmental review process, which they intend to use as they communicated to us as the means by which they will make the decision about what is the preferred project. So that's a critical thing happening in the next few months. And then in addition, the $85 million infra grant, which this organization received, we will be entering a cooperative agreement with the Federal Highway Administration and Caltrans over the use of those funds. So those two sets of activities over the next few months, I think, will be somewhat resource and time intensive for staff and also for this board. I think you'll be getting a request on your time to participate in conversations regarding those. And as such, we've put together this recommendation that that we establish an ad hoc subcommittee that would represent the YCG board in these conversations, particularly with our partners at Caltrans, SACOG, FHWA, and other interested parties. And that we would work, this ad hoc committee would work with staff to develop recommendations for full board consideration, provide monthly reports to the full board and seek direction on key issues, and then just be available on a day-to-day basis to provide advice and consultation to staff, you know, in what we expect maybe a fast-moving policy environment as we, again, going through the next few months. So that's all I have on this item. As I noted in the board packet, Supervisor Saylor had some suggestions with regard to the composition of the committee, and I would leave it to him to share some of his perspectives on that.
Thanks, Autumn. So, colleagues, this is a kind of a bit of a moving target. The scope that the application addressed leaves some open questions for us. For all of us. And since we are the fund recipients, we're in a pretty key position to help influence this, this managed lane and the associated striping and technical equipment that would be installed. This is often pretty much directed by local jurisdictions. In our case, we've got SACOG and Caltrans and our agency, as well as our neighbors in the Solano area, who all have an interest in guiding the exact scope of this. And we have many community groups all across the segment of this roadway that will be weighing in. And just in the last few weeks, even before the meeting that we had last month, there's been quite a bit of conversation going on, lots of different areas, and I think it gets pretty confusing pretty quickly. The jurisdictions on our board, who are represented on our board, that are most directly impacted are Davis and West Sacramento and Yolo County. All of us, in fact, all of us in the region, will benefit from this project or be saddened by it if we don't do a pretty darn good job. And so we have some really very eager partners in Caltrans. They're very interested in working closely with us. And I think in a lot of ways they're stepping outside of some of their comfort zones to be sure that they do that. And we have an opportunity to be key players in making this really significant generational project come forward. So with that, what I'd like to do is appoint Chris Ledesma from West Sacramento and myself to serve our board with this group on this project to help us get through this next period. I think you know, Tom, do you have a comment?
I just have a question. I think your recommendations are excellent. But, you know, I wanted to say Caltrans is not new to this. These lanes are in place all over the state. I've been in Southern California, Central California, East Bay, through Danville on 680. These hot lanes are all over now. So I imagine there's a fair amount of data out there. I don't know that we need to reinvent any wheels here, but it's probably good to understand what's proposed and why it's good for us. I don't think we have to invent any new animal. That's, I guess, the essence of my comment. Thank you.
Yep. Could be. I think that one of the issues is going to be what kind of managed lane it's going to be. And I think we need to be involved in that decision.
I'd be interested in knowing the kind of revenue they generate. And does that revenue come back to this specific segment of roadway? You know, because clearly we've got to find ways to pay for some of these things.
I think one of the issues might be setting up a tolling authority of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of the conversations that needs to happen. And Jesse, you have a comment, question?
First, I really agree with the comments of my colleague, but I also wanted to just add that I think it's the right people for the right job. I really support it. Equity. We have a chance to build in long-term equity in our values. So I just want to just cheer you on for that. Thanks.
Okay. The recommendation is that Director Frerichs serve as alternate as we move forward.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I wanted to just not necessarily respond to the questions that Director Stollard raised, but rather to just kind of offer that, you know, if it's appropriate to the, I would be happy to kind of facilitate at a future board meeting a conversation where we could share some of the best practices and lessons learned from my own work, and we can also invite some other speakers who have expertise in this area to talk about what they've done in other parts of California.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Tom.
I certainly think Lucas would be a great alternate, but our city attorney has opined that in a 5-member board, you can't have a 3rd member of the board be an alternate because it means 3 people are actually parties to the conversation, even if it's through multiple meetings, like a serial meeting. So I'm just putting that out there so that maybe Hope can tell us whether we can do it legally or we can't.
I agree, Mr. Stollard. Director Stollard, I do believe at this point in time it makes the most sense just to appoint 2 members to assure that we are staying within the rules of the ad hoc and the less than the majority of the voting members.
I know on the LAFCO, for example, we have 2 members and we have an alternate from the county board, so maybe we better check that out. Lucas, you have a question, comment?
Yeah, just a couple things. First of all, I'm fine. I don't have a problem not being an alternate. That's, I certainly don't want to run afoul of any issues of serial meeting type situations. I actually was going to ask this question of Hope anyway. Because I thought, regardless of the alternate situation, I do think it actually, and I think this works well within the confines of the Brown Act, because Director Dulcich is an ex officio member of the board. Is it acceptable for Director Dulcich to participate in the sort of subcommittee as an ex officio member? And I don't mean to put him on the spot. so he may think about it or may not, or may be able to participate. But I think this project is equally, if not more important to UC Davis as it is any of all of our jurisdictions. And so, you know, I think that it would be very important to have the university at the table in this process, sort of in this discussion of regional, you know, infrastructure project like this, transportation project.
And just real quickly before Director Dulcich responds, I do agree with Director Frerichs that because Director Dulcich is not a voting member of this board, he does not count towards the purposes of achieving that quorum cap. And Director Saylor, as to your comment, I will follow up. Each agency does typically, it's a closer call on the alternate. The most conservative approach is not to appoint a voting member who may form a majority at one point with the spoken wheel. But with that, I will obviously defer to Director Dulcich to respond.
Well, yeah, thank you, Hope. And I can be available and would be very excited to be available and help out. And like Director Ferrix mentioned, UC Davis has a very strong stake in this with 10,000 employees on each side of the project with the Sacramento campus and the Davis campus, students going back and forth every day, patients going back and forth every day on the causeway, and a great need to get transit buses moving quickly across the causeway in the long term. So that's our primary concern, and we're very much focused on wanting to participate as much as possible. So if the board desires, I am available.
Very good. I think we've got good questions and comments, so let's see if there's anybody in the public who'd like to address us on this topic. I don't see any hands. Do we see anybody?
We have not had any requests as yet for this item.
All right.
Do you want to treat your proposed action as a motion, and would you like a second?
Yes.
I will respectfully second your motion.
All right. Thank you, Tom. So there's a motion by Saylor, second by Stallard. Would you call the roll, please?
I do have a slight potential tweak to it, which is instead of the motion, and at least the staff recommendation is just of the two directors plus myself as an alternate. And I know that's not accurate. I would just say that if Director Dulcich in this case, if he's interested in participating, I think that we appoint this, subcommittee of Saylor, Ledesma, and ex officio Director Dulcich as the committee. That's what I would slightly tweak. The motion.
Thanks, Lucas. Those points are consistent with my interest in making the motion, and so I think the second accepts it. So that'll be what we vote on. Good job, friends. Okay. Let's count the votes.
City of Davis.
Aye.
City of West Sacramento.
Aye.
City of Winters.
Aye.
City of Woodland.
Aye.
Yolo County.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
Very good.
I think that brings us to item 8, isn't it? What's that item, Autumn? My little computer here has lost its power.
Yeah, this is priorities for retaining and reinstating service in response to future staffing levels. And this is an item that Jose is going to lead, but I will share my screen.
Great.
And thank you, Autumn. Chair Saylor and members of the board, always a pleasure. This item is brought before the board in part because of how we had to be reactive to our driver shortages in September. And the primary recommendations brought before the board in terms of which services to reduce, suspend, or otherwise eliminate were heavily staff-driven, and that is not our preferred methodology. So we are asking, we asked our advisory committees, both the Citizens Advisory Committee and the Technical Advisory Committee, their thoughts on the similar items before bringing it to the board tonight. Next slide.
And Jose, am I the only one who's got the static going on, or is it something with your microphone or something? Is it just my?
Yeah, no, I'm hearing it too.
It's a little staticky, yeah.
Oh, okay. Let me try muting. Is that coming in any clearer?
But still got it. But I think we can understand you. It's just a little irritating.
Apologies. Sorry, I'm not sure what's going on there. I do apologize. But ultimately, what we are recommending as staff with this item is for the boards to discuss priorities for reallocating available resources as our driver resources change. Ultimately, appreciatively, our boards took action tonight to take a significant step to help us mitigate our driver shortages tonight. But we are trying to make sure that should it be any kind of uncontrollable factor or something that's unforeseen that impacts our available staffing, we have clear direction from our board and our committees as far as how we may need to reallocate resources in the future. So what staff is working on is to come up with scenarios for reallocating those resources, including the elimination of certain trips from existing services, possibly reducing service bans, suspending entire fixed routes, and limiting or reducing microtransit service. I don't want to give the impression that we're only investigating potentially service reductions or negative outcomes. we are also looking to get continued direction and prioritization about how we are to return or potentially expand services should our driver shortage be mitigated or come to the point where we are reliable, comfortable with the reliability and availability of drivers and services so that we are meeting ultimately our district's goals and the mobility needs of the community. Next slide. So as I mentioned earlier, we took a similar item to our Citizens Advisory Committee, or CAC, late in September. Some of the suggestions they included for prioritizing same-day medical and appointments and trips, evaluating the benefits of possible volunteer operators or other quote-unquote outside-the-box opportunities or suggestions, considering taking into account before we make any changes in service the out-of-pocket costs to customers for any said change, the availability either to renew or possibly break first and last mile connections in context of any proposed service changes, and to consider other strategies such as temporary fare subsidies, which we have kind of considered and are working with, for example, our CCJPA partners to help and allow for our impacted customers, our YOLO bus impacted customers, to possibly utilize some of our partner agency services during our temporary suspensions. The Technical Advisory Committee, or TAC, we also met with them early in October, included similar recommendations, but also recommended staff consider the efficiencies of how and when service changes are implemented. Not surprising given they're our technical committee, but they were wanting to make sure that we take into account or factor in, again, how some changes, service changes, would have, for lack of a better term, trickle-down impacts on other services or partners. And so that's something that they have recommended that we take a look at. Next slide. So staff has put together a list of possible prioritization factors. And there's a list there that was also included as part of the staff report. And the exhibit that was in that report is also presented here as attachment one. Just a summary of our current in-service services. Fixed route, YOLO bus special, or our paratransit service, and our current microtransit services, as well as a list of those that are already suspended because of the current shortage. We're asking for feedback, insights, direction from our board tonight to consider some of these possible factors and others, and to consider whether or not we should weight these factors, treat them all equally, kind of to help us quantify potentially some of these factors that are not necessarily easily quantifiable, in particular some of the things like social equity and justice, identifying any kind of disproportionate impacts to sensitive populations. And so with the work, with your guidance, the guidance of our committees, and discussions that staff has already had, we are prepared to look into the existing kind of use case of our services, who is using our current services, who's riding, overlay that with available data from the state. Autumn has given some great insights into how to do so, comparing that with available tools and resources, including things like Cal and ViroScreen, to overlay where and when our customers are riding, what their demographics and social current setting might be, so we can define our existing, our current YOLO bus customer, but also put that in the context of how any proposed service change, either expansion or reduction, may impact them in their current commutes or possibly in their future commutes. So this item is being presented as a info or discussion item. We very much welcome and encourage board discussion. If I can clarify any of the items we brought forward today, I'd be happy to do so. And it is staff's intent to provide a draft framework or methodology with which to for the boards to consider in terms of prioritizing any future service changes that hopefully this discussion will help staff to develop. Thank you for the opportunity. And again, I'd be happy to clarify or answer any questions that the board or the public may have.
Thank you, Jose. Colleagues?
Before we go to that, one kind of comment or just contextual observation as we engage in this conversation, which is we put this in the board packet the day before OSHA released their new guidance that employers of 100 people or more are going to have to either impose a vaccine mandate or a weekly testing mandate starting January 5th. That has subsequently been temporary. There's an injunction so that they're not Right now, it looks like January 5th may or may not be the date, but one way or another, we are likely to be seeing a mandate that will apply to Trans 7, our drivers, sometime soon. And so what that means is that this is not just an academic exercise, that even with our increase in wages, there's a possibility that when we do see a mandate, we may lose more drivers. And so we are beginning the exercise of planning for kind of a worst case scenario. But we're not alone. Our colleagues at other transit agencies are doing the same. You know, what happens if a third of our drivers or 20% of our drivers don't show up when this mandate takes effect? So I just want you to know that I'm very glad that we're having this conversation tonight, because we will be thinking about this as we do some of that worst case scenario planning for, you know, another dramatic shift in our workforce at some point.
Very good. What would be the most helpful kind of input from the board? And I see Tom has a comment, but maybe that question first, Tom. Tom, you're muted, but if you could wait just a minute. Autumn, what would be most helpful for the board input to you?
I think looking at this list of a list of potential factors for prioritization in terms of looking at, like, existing ridership, pre-COVID ridership, social equity, you know, financial performance, and weighing in about which of those factors you consider to be the most important, and that we should weight most heavily as we think about where and how we might further reduce service.
Very good. Thank you. Tom?
My answer was I actually have nothing to add to this. I think it's a strictly existential situation. I think the staff did the right thing in order to create a big list of factors to even think about. But then we just have to wait until see what the facts are that present themselves, and then apply that list as best we can and try to make lemonade out of it. So I think the staff's done a good job, and I have nothing to add to the list.
Thank you, Tom. Anybody else? Okay. Our advisory committee has weighed in and has provided information that you've incorporated in this package, I believe. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's what you said. Is there any other public comment for us?
I am not seeing any requests from the public at this time.
Okay. And Lucas, you have a comment?
Yeah, I think I just would say I appreciate the work that's gone into this and appreciate the recommendations and sort of thought by the community advisory committee as well. I do think it would be helpful. I mean, I understand that staff is sort of searching for a sort of just some discussion and help maybe influence the sort of thoughts about what maybe to come back with as more formal recommendation, I guess. But I do think that, you're the transit and transportation experts. I'm not. So, or we maybe are not. So I do think that, like, having, I think being willing to say, like, here's what we're thinking, like, maybe, you know, here's how we would proceed with it in this order, or here's our sort of proposed recommendation. I guess that will be forthcoming in a further discussion, but I'm not sure that I have more to add to, than what's sort of here. I mean, a lot of these items sound pretty reasonable and seem to make sense, but I do, you all are paid to sort of think about this on a daily basis. And so I really rely on the recommendation from staff, I would say, in this regard, is sort of how to potentially proceed. So, but I do appreciate the work that's gone into it thus far. And I'm not sure that I see anything that's missing per se. But I'm also not sure. I don't know what I don't know.
That comment is very much appreciated. Director Ferrick said, again, this wasn't an exercise to try and trick the board or see, you know, like, hey, make sure we cut everything. There's more an opportunity that if there is something that is, as Autumn mentioned, you know, a priority, a significant factor that maybe should be weighted at 1.5 times of the others, or help us rank those items, or to tell us that, you know, that bullet list is equally important, so make sure any recommendation checks all those boxes in one way or another. That would be appreciated. And so, again, if that's the case, and I'm taking that ultimately as a compliment that we got the majority, if not all of the factors, correct. But I don't want to make that assumption. I'm wanting to present that to the board as an opportunity for further discussion.
Okay, good. Chris?
No, I thank you. I think Director Ferber got kind of my sentiment back, and I think I stand the same way. I having a menu of choices for somebody who really isn't thinking about this every day is a little difficult exercise. I would say, though, as you come back and think about changes or closures of routes or cutting of routes, very clearly articulating what when is that thinking would be important. So I get your kind of point here. You kind of want to know that you're aiming in the right direction. I would probably stand on the direction of where there's service that's being cut to an area that needs that kind of route or whatever else. That might be a consideration, but again, it may be a little too premature for me to kind of guess, but certainly equity will play a role in that, as well as financial performance of the route or impact to the agency. But again, that's just coming to our points, just a guess at this point. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments? I guess I would, one of the things that I think is on the list is if there's one consideration could be availability of other options for potential riders. So if we have another service that's in the area or we can partner with one of our sister agencies, as we've been doing with Unitrans and RT, one of the things that this series of exercises we're involved in now has revealed is that there are opportunities for us to share our resources. So I would think that we'd want to keep our eyes open to those kind of possibilities. But I think in the abstract, it's challenging. I think though, you know, one of the things that's true is if staff didn't ask us for us to weigh in on this, we would be a little confused and maybe a little concerned if the things started happening without our input. So I think you've shared with us some of the tough criteria that you'll have to weigh. And I think if we have any other thoughts, individual members of the board ought to send them in and make sure they're in the mix. And some of it will be localized. I think it was maybe one of you said, we don't know. I think Tom said it was existential. Well, it's going to be isolated to specific decisions. And so when those things come up, articulating them as been expressed would be wise. So I think we've done public comment. It was an informational item with a little discussion. I think are we ready to move? Oh, Jesse, your hand just appeared. Is that an action?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you why my internet is being unstable. The comment I wanted to make was that I don't have any crystal ball on this, but to me, just from a practical point of view, the existing ridership, obviously alignment with YCTD's adopted visions, values, and priorities is our overarching value, but existing ridership and ridership changes to me seem the most useful as far as having to pivot quickly on decision making. And of course, the visions, values, and priorities are embedded in what we do anyway. So to me, those two are really stand out as the guideposts.
So there you have it. The greatest amount of wisdom that we can muster at 8:03 on a Monday evening. So.
And thank you very much. And Jose may want to say something as well, but I just want to say, like, I realize this may feel like a bit of an abstract exercise, but it's actually just extremely helpful to have heard from each of you where you stand on this, because it is a bit daunting when we're sort of trying to make these decisions in a vacuum and just talking to each other about it. And it's nice. It's just always helpful to take a step back and have a conversation like this, so we feel a bit more clear going into those tough conversations when they do come.
Great.
And Mr. Chair, I agree with you. It's good they brought it to us. And I think we owe it to them to say, we're not going to second guess you in the heat of the moment. You're going to have to make decisions. And afterwards, it may have proven to be wise or not wise, but we understand. Yeah. And we now got a set of criteria at least to help guide you.
Right. Well, as long as they make the right decisions, then we're fine.
That's funny.
Very good. Next item is item 9, the potential continuation of the Youth Ride Free program. How lengthy a presentation does the board want on this item?
I don't know. I don't want to answer the board, but I could be very quick on this item.
Yes. Okay. That would be good.
So again, thank you for the opportunity. On this item, our board extended the existing and currently in place Youth Ride Free program in October 2020 through the end of this calendar year. So the program is currently effective through December 31st of this year. We did during the current budget season earlier this year effectively budget for the continuation of this program through the end of the fiscal year, and that is what staff is recommending or asking the board to consider doing, is extending the effective date of this program through the end of the current fiscal year, through June 30th of 2022. Prior to that time, we will do our best to provide a formal report, taking into account the fact that this program existed just before and through the entire pandemic period, and bring another either recommendation to continue or to terminate the program, again, before the end of the fiscal year. But as it stands right now, there are no anticipated or no significant budget impacts for the district to continue the program through June of 22, and we do feel that the continuation and the continued availability of this program would allow the district significant opportunity to collaborate and coordinate with our regional partners who have similar programs like Sacramento Regional Transit. The value that is brought by being able to advertise our youth in the region riding free on our services, and more importantly, if we continue to ride free throughout the region, I think kind of I haven't done the math exactly, but I think it would pay for itself. Staff strongly recommends the board consider continuing this program at least through June of 22, and be happy to answer any more questions if the board has them for the public.
Motion, Mr. Chair, to approve the action.
Is there a second?
Lauren seconds.
So we have a motion by Stallard and a second by Lauren. Is there any public comment on this item before we take a vote?
Unrequested.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments from other members of the board? All right. We have a motion on the floor. Please call the roll.
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Aye.
And County of Yolo?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Brings us, Autumn, to item 10. Your executive director report.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chair. So I have a few items I want to share. I do have a slide or two, but I'll put those on at the end. The items that I put it in the report are around, first is our unmet transit needs, which is this annual process. And thank you to Director Ferris, who chaired that meeting last week that was organized by SACOG. We have been making a push to try to get information about the unmet needs process out there to our partners. Several of our interns have actually gone out to some of our transit stops and been talking with riders and distributing flyers at various places, again, to try to just hear from our riders about what service they need. And the comments are due to SACOG by November 22nd. We did have just two members of the public who came and gave comment at our unmet needs hearing, so we are encouraging everyone to kind of participate in other ways. On the Woodland Microtransit, we had our RFI, as you know, that went out, and we got great responses. We got nine responses to the RFI, and we're in the process of meeting with all of them to understand what the kind of options are that are out there, what some of the new technologies and capabilities exist. And so we have we're going to be putting together an RFP. Again, for the service in Woodland, as well as trying to kind of harmonize our plans and upgrade our user platform or the app-based platform we're hoping to move to. We hope to bring that RFP to you in December. And then on the hiring front, we're continuing to recruit for positions. We have three that are open currently, our financial associate, our procurement and grant specialist, and our communications and marketing specialist. And I bring this up because it's actually really interesting that we have been looking at comparable wage ranges for our positions, and we've found that YCDD staff have been are on the low end in terms of comparable wage ranges. As a result, for the two new positions, the procurement and grant specialist and communications and marketing, we've advertised those at new ranges because these are new positions using the comps, the comparable wages that we did the salary survey. And we've got great applicants for those. We started interviewing and we've got very strong applicants. Interestingly, for our financial associate, which is a position that we've had for a very long time, we haven't updated the wage range in a long time. We got a lot of applicants. None of them are qualified. Literally, we don't have any applicants that we want to interview for the position. And so that really, I think, is a stark indication of the fact that we do need to, across the board, update our wage ranges to make sure that we really are at competitive salaries. And so I am planning to bring to you in December updates for the wage ranges for existing YCDD staff to bring us up to kind of where we need to be to make sure we're able to kind of fill vacancies as they come up and to keep our existing qualified staff happy and around. So I think that for the finance associate position, frankly, we're going to wait until December, re-advertise that, assuming that the board does take action to increase the salary range for that, and then recirculate that and hope that we get more qualified applicants at a higher salary range. So that's my update on that piece and a little bit of a preview for the December board meeting. As I mentioned earlier, OSHA did issue new regulations regarding vaccines and testing mandates. It's been stayed. Enforcement of that has been stayed, but we do expect that to be coming sometime soon. So that's just something that's very much on our radar screen, and we're going to be bringing you updates. And our hope is to bring you in December a contingency plan for what we would do in a worst-case scenario if a vaccine mandate means we need to cut additional service. And then finally, I think, Mr. Chair, you brought this up at the beginning, but we do have an infrastructure bill. It has not yet been signed, but this is very encouraging news. And this bill really doesn't, I haven't looked at all the details, but definitely transit is a priority in this bill. And so it's very exciting. We look forward to hopefully seeing that signed into law and thinking about some new opportunities for us. So finally, I just want to share some exciting news on the ridership front. We have our numbers now for October, and it's pretty interesting. What we see here, is that working? I'm getting some weird pop-up message. Can you all see this chart? Okay,
yeah.
Great. So what you have here, the green bars are our pre-COVID ridership. That's fiscal year 19 to 20. The yellow, the blue bars are last year. And then the yellow bars are this current fiscal year. And what you see is September and October, our ridership is really taking off. So we are 100% higher ridership this October compared to last October and creeping back up, getting closer to our pre-COVID ridership. So this is the most dramatic increase that we've seen since COVID. And I think this is very much pegged to the university reopening and just for the economic activity and travel activity that is stimulated. So I just want to share that encouraging news with you all. And I have one final slide, which is on the paratransit and microtransit, where we see that not a similar trend as far as the increase. We're kind of holding steady. If anything, we've dropped a little bit from July and August, but ridership there gradually coming up. I will just leave it at that and stop sharing my screen. And that is it for my executive director's report.
Thank you, Autumn. Some very interesting news. Any questions, colleagues? Okay. I don't see any. So I think we
really, really quick question. Yeah. I mean, thanks for that update. Any sense of why? I mean, I think, in part, might be, gas prices seem to continue to be going up, and we certainly saw that, in a couple of years ago when we had sort of had similar roughly $5 per gallon gas. So curious about that, or, obviously some folks seem to be coming back to the office place, downtown Sacramento and such, a bit more. So curious though, if you have any other, if there's any other thoughts about what anecdotal or otherwise.
I mean, looking at the data that we have, I mean, the routes where we're seeing this increase are the 42 is a big one, and it's our highest performing route anyway. And then we also see that, you know, the A and the L line, the unit transit assistance is in here. So, you know, I would say that between those three, that is where we're seeing the bulk of the growth in ridership. And that's why I think it is very much tied to the university. And particularly with, you know, while folks may be coming back to downtown Sacramento because we've suspended most, you know, our express routes that serve downtown Sacramento, the only people, it could be that some of our ridership on the 42 is people going to downtown Sacramento. But I would say overall, I would think that would be, you know, our ridership is going down as far as people going to downtown Sacramento since we suspended those routes.
Thank you. Very good. Very, very interesting. Good meeting. I think we're at the conclusion of our agenda. So that means it's time to adjourn, and we will come back together on December 13th with even more excitement awaiting us. So thank you, everyone, and we're adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Have a great night, everyone.
Bye-bye.